Good morning, everyone. The strident debate over the federal debt ceiling and the more realistic than perhaps ever before debate over really cutting the deficit in Washington has raised the issue of what are tax cuts for? The conventional wisdom up until this summer was that tax cuts actually encourage investment and stimulate the economy. But some economists and tax analysts suggest that the Bush tax cuts, which are still in effect, even though there's been a debate every single time they expire as to whether we let them expire and have the revenue go into the federal treasury, which it, of course, desperately needs, that those Bush tax cuts disproportionately benefit the richest Americans. Well, a number of rich, wealthy Americans who agree with that suggest that that is the case and have actually explicitly endorsed letting the Bush tax cuts expire for people making more than $1 million a year. Is that good PR? Is it good economics? We wanted to have that discussion this morning. Charlie Fink joins us. He's an entrepreneur. He joins us from his office in Vienna, Virginia. Good morning, Charlie.
Hi.
And Megan McArdle is a senior editor at The Atlantic, where she writes about business and economics. Megan, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So, Charlie, let me just start with you here. Warren Buffett says that when he asked around about shared sacrifice in his office and among his friends, he found that almost all the CEOs that he hangs out with are taxed less than the people who clean their offices. First of all, is that the case for you? And secondly, what's he talking about there exactly?
Well, I think he's talking about the fact that, working individuals can less afford to give up parts of their income to pay for taxes, whereas the wealthy have the resources and are not, affected on a day-to-day basis by changes large and small in their income.
All right, so that raises two issues. One, there's the equity question of who's paying proportionately more into the federal treasury, which I presume is partially why you signed up to be one of the 100 financially successful people, patriotic millionaires, you're calling yourselves, who want those Bush tax cuts to expire for people making more than $1 million a year, right? It's the equity question that motivates you in part, correct?
Yes.
But what about the economics? If you get paid less in your business and in businesses of people that you know, how does that translate into something tangible in the economy besides some more money in the federal treasury, which, of course, would be nice?
If I get paid less, I will not hire fewer people. If I get paid less, I will put more less money into the stock market, perhaps. But it certainly won't affect my interest in creating more wealth. If I am taxed more, it will not affect my behavior, either in business or personally.
All right. Megan McArdle, senior editor at The Atlantic. In your experience, if CEOs make less, if management makes less, do the companies typically hire more?
You know, the data on this is a little hard to parse. You can get data that goes both ways. Certainly raising taxes has some impact on the economy. On the other hand, so does running a big deficit. And given the position that we're in right now, I think that most economists agree that unless we find some magical way to spend a lot less money really quickly, we need to raise taxes. And the kind of obvious place to do that is on the people who have the most, people like Mr. Fink.
Well, let me ask you, Megan, I want to read you this comment from one of our listeners and get you to kind of evaluate it. This listener says, for the umpteenth time, income is not wealth. A tax on income is not a tax on wealth. If you want to tax the wealthy, you should tax them. Tax the holding stocks, bonds, mortgages as a lender, and land valued in the excess of $10 million. Tax the amount over $10 million, plus tax the amount over $100 million, and so on until you tax the amount over $10 billion. This true millionaire and billionaire tax is based on an old proposal by Huey Long. What do you think?
This comes up every time, especially during recessions, but in general, it comes up over and over again. But when you actually look at the mechanics of this, it would be almost economically impossible. If you think about all of the people who have what economists call illiquid wealth, something you can't sell quickly, like real estate. So now you've got a big tax on your real estate. That might be your only big holding. Do you make people sell their family estate because you've levied this tax on it every year? Also, is there going to be a buyer at the time when the taxes are due? You know, often large chunks of land take years to move. And so actually, you know, when economists have looked at this, it turns out to be that, A, it would be not particularly efficient. It would force people into all sorts of bad transactions just to get the money to pay the taxes. And that's not really what you want from a tax system. What you want is a tax system that is as little disruptive as possible, not one that is massively disruptive to everyone.
So stick with the income, and maybe the illiquid assets are going to be much, much more challenging. That's Megan McArdle, senior editor at The Atlantic. Charlie Fink, a couple of our listeners had an interesting question that, you know, I don't know if you can necessarily be candid about this, but I'd love to hear your answers. Are you ready? Jay Fabrizio, he's a listener in Rhode Island, says, what tax rate do you pay? How's it achieved? Do you take advantage of loopholes? Do you have a savvy accountant?
The answer is yes, but I happen to be into alternative minimum tax, which is meant to capture people like me who have mostly interest and capital gains income instead of regular income. So I pay over 40% right now.
I see. And if the Bush tax cuts went away, how much of a check do you think you would write, more than you already do?
That is difficult to say in my position, but certainly it would not affect me if I paid, let's say, 10 or 15% more.
Which leads to this next question. I Will, this is the name this person uses who listens in Massachusetts. Is there a point when more personal wealth does not matter anymore to you, Charles Fink, or becomes something of a burden? That's a little existential question, but I like it.
Yeah, I don't think it would be a burden, but I do think that... additional wealth for the wealthy is a little bit piling on. I would also say that it would be useful to consider two points. One is we got into the situation we're in by taking a massive tax cut during wartime. I don't think that has any historical precedent. The other is this notion that somehow wealthy people are job creators. As an individual, the jobs that I create are for personal trainers, massage therapists,
right,
executive chefs, landscapers, pool boys, and to say nothing of the positions at my country club and the exclusive vacation destinations that my family and I enjoy.
So you can afford it, but there's the trickle down there. Charlie Fink, entrepreneur who made millions in the 90s. He's a producer of musical theater, and Megan McArdle, senior writer at The Atlantic. Thanks so much for your candor, folks.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.